armchair.
There's something, I'll say there's something kind of about a kid that's never played baseball.
We have been hoodwinked, bamboozled, and flat out deceived.
Why did you get so drunk?
You got drunk. I'm just really exhausted.
What's in that cup?
Rum and Cokes.
Do you have any idea how important
you
this is?
Have
trying
any
to
idea?
Save the pump
goal.
Really, this
you
is what
have
you're
any
doing?
Idea?
This is what you're doing?
Chief, what do you want to do tonight?
The same thing we do every night. Try to take over the world.
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
Armchair.
YouTube Live.
Radio Station.
The radio station you can call your own. What listeners like about our station?
I like everything. It's always on my radio.
We never stop the music, except for now, when I talk.
You're listening to Braves Country with Mac McGee and the Armchair Quarterbacks. We're here live weekdays, 3 p.m. Eastern to 5 p.m. Eastern, WQEE 99.1 FM, The Key, and simulcasting on youtube.com/@Braves Country, your first choice for Southern sports. Good afternoon. I'm Mac McGee, and I don't know much, but I know one thing.
You're not asking to get paid what the men get paid. We're asking to get paid the same percentage of revenue.
You want to get paid the same percentage in revenue as the NBA players? You're going to regret that. Let me show you why. The average WNBA player's salary is $113,000. And the average NBA player salary is $9.7 million. The NBA's league revenue is $10 billion. And the league revenue for the WNBA is $60 million, which is 100% subsidized by the NBA because the WNBA is a failed organization. We see that WNBA players are making twice what NBA players are making. So you're going to have to cut your salary by half if you want to make the same percentage revenue that the NBA players are making. Dang, equality. Not so nice when it's not convenient for you.
Armchair.
Community Access Channel.
He's the armchair quarterback. He's full of beer and he's full of snacks. The All-American Man.
Hey, howdy, hi, and how the hell are you? Hope you are having a great Football Friday, and we're going to get into it today. Fridays, we're going to talk the lines of your college football, the NFL. We're going to get into a lot of things here in hour number one. Hour number two, because we're getting you set for game five of the ALCS, Braves Country today will come your way. We're going to talk a little Atlanta Braves offseason rumors and moves that need to be made and what we think is going to happen. But let's get into the National Football League. Before we do want to make sure that we congratulate the champions of the WNBA. I'm joking. I have no idea who won that crap. All right, let's get into the NFL. Let's get it. All right, we're talking lines today. Because really, that's the only thing that anybody cares about, right? I mean, come on. Come on. It's the lines of the NFL. That's all we care about. We'll do college football in the next segment. We will talk about the actual games in those. And, of course, remember, Saturday mornings, we come your way 10 a.m. to noon right here on The Key. Armchair Quarterbacks kickoff show, and I'll have all the guys with me. For those of y'all that normally catch us on YouTube around 9:30, we're starting it a little later tomorrow right at 10 o'clock, essentially. I've got a couple of guys that are out that are not going to be able to make it. So just so everyone didn't have to do yeoman's work, we're going to do the show 10 to noon tomorrow. So anyways, let's get into the National Football League. And by the way, that show will be on our new YouTube channel, Armchair QB Radio, youtube.com/@ArmchairQB Radio. We will share it to our Braves Country Radio YouTube channel. There's just a lot of reasons. Won't get into it, but essentially, it's been branding issues that the powers that be suggested that we kind of separate the two shows. So, fair enough. All right, let's get into what is getting down and getting ugly in the National Football League. Gotta look at some of these lines going into the weekend. And there's some that jump out at me, and there's some that I do want to stay away from. We're going to go through them, and then I will give you my locks. I'm going to give you a six-pack to go today here on Football Friday. All right. First of all, let's get into... We're going to go local first. Atlanta getting 2.5 at the Buccaneers. The over-under is 37. There's nothing about this game that I like. I don't feel like either Atlanta or Tampa Bay are very good. They don't get very good quarterback play. If I was going to lean one way, I'd probably go Buccaneers. But honest engine, the Buccaneers are not that good of a team where if a turnover here, some bad penalties, whatever, they're not good enough to overcome it even though they're at home. They're a very below-average football team. I think they're a touch better than the Falcons right now, but that's mainly just because Ridder hasn't been in at quarterback. So I'm steering clear of this game. The over-under is 37. If it was a little higher, I would actually be looking for the under. I think this is going to be an old-fashioned, just clumsy game where... The winner of this game, it's somewhere. I still feel like the under is going to hit. I don't know how you're going to get 20 to, essentially what you're calling for here is a 20 to 17 victory one way or the other. And I don't believe either offense are going to move on the defense. I really see the winner of this game being more like 13 to 10, 16 to 12 type of game. But I don't feel comfortable enough about it to do anything but stay away from it. The next game on the docket are the Buffalo Bills giving up a touchdown at New England. The over-under is 41. And I know what most of you folks are saying. You're saying, look, Bill Belichick's a great coach. He's going to figure it out. There's no way they're going to continue to be this bad. And they're at home. They're backed in the corner. And let's go. Let's get it. You realize since that debacle in the playoff game a couple of years ago, where they got blown out by Buffalo, New England has not played a competitive game against the Buffalo Bills. I don't think it starts again. I'm going to lay that touchdown. I'm going to take the Buffalo Bills. It's one of my favorite teasers of the weekend to grab Buffalo and anything else that you like. Buffalo, who played, they won, but they played a bad, sloppy game on Sunday night. And that's why this line is as low as it is. It should not be this low, y'all. This line should be every bit of double digits. New England has been awful this year. And I would just be really, really surprised if Buffalo didn't go in there and just blow their doors off. So, give me Buffalo -7. And then we head to Indianapolis, where the Cleveland Browns are taking on the Colts. Two sorry offenses squaring off. In Indianapolis. The Cleveland Browns defense, though, it's real. It's real. And you saw how bad Gardner Minshew struggled against the Jaguars, whose defense, it's okay, but they don't have the front seven that the Cleveland Browns have. And I think Cleveland is going to cause pressure early and often in that game. Do you know that the Colts over under team total is 18.5? How are the Colts getting there? This offense is terrible. They're not going to be able to run the ball on Cleveland. It's going to be a very slow grind them out game. Give me the Browns. I'd be willing to take the 2.5, but my favorite play on this, the Colts minus 18.5. I don't see how they're going to get over that number. It makes zero sense to me that it's that high. I would have thought, if you had asked me, because I like doing this with these games, before I ever look at it, I go, what do you think the number would be? And then you see the number, and then you look at some of the trends, and you look at some of the analytics, and sometimes you see where it squares up. You're like, all right, well, I didn't take this into consideration, et cetera, et cetera. I've looked this up and down. I don't see it. So I'm going to take the Browns to hold the Colts to under 18.5. Next game on the docket. This is a fun one. This is going to be one that's going to be heavily bet on. The Detroit Lions, the Baltimore Ravens. Ravens giving up 3. Lions on the road again. 43 is the over-under. Baltimore minus 150 on the money line. Now, they did not take their break like a lot of teams do coming back from London. But I don't know if that's necessarily going to be a big problem, and I do believe this as well. Baltimore is better than their 4-2 record. You could make the argument that Baltimore could be 6-0. Baltimore is a solid fundamental team, and what I like the most about Baltimore, not only are they at home this week, but we finally saw Harbaugh kick field goals and stop going for it on fourth down in stupid situations. Take the points with that Baltimore defense. And I know it's basically a no-name defense. You can't take any of these teams and name a better defense that doesn't have a household name. But their defense as a collective is greater than any one player they have. And it also leans into the fact that they run the ball a lot. They hold the ball a lot. So their defense stays fresh. I like Baltimore in this game. I like them in a big way. I like them on the money line. Baltimore minus 150. Detroit's good. Don't get me wrong. Detroit is good. Detroit is a good team. But they're on the road. And I just like Baltimore to win a very close knockdown dragout game. Raiders are at the Bears. What a dumpster fire the Bears have become. The Raiders, I don't think they are as valued as they should be. The Las Vegas Raiders have steadily put together a solid season so far. And they're going to go on the road. They're going to face Chicago. Chicago team that's going to be without Justin Fields. A Chicago team whose defense has had a lot of problems this year. And I think that the Raiders are going to win that game. Now, here's the problem. They're a 3-point favorite. Their money line is minus 170. And I don't give you money lines that are greater than minus 150. That's just the rule that we have. So if I was taking this anywhere, I believe I would take the Raiders minus 3, but I don't love that play, but I dang sure don't like the Bears plus 3. The Raiders have not played well on the road, but the Bears are a bad football team. Next game up, this one, I do like a number on this. Commanders at the Giants, over under 39. Commanders minus 3. Commanders, smoke and mirror type team. The Giants. I like them on at home getting the 3 points. I don't know why they would be favored by, as big an underdog as they are. Just when you look at this particular matchup, and this is back-to-back road games for Washington, that always plays in to my line of thinking, especially when you're talking about a National Football League team that's not very good.
And they've got a lot of holes, and they're going to be on the road once again. It's a divisional matchup. You're going to give me the 3 points. You know, I'm, I actually might go out there and buy the hook, but look, 3 points is 3 points. I would take the Giants. I honestly don't hate taking the Giants on the money line. They should have won last week, but that's not why I'm taking the Giants. I'm taking the Giants. It's not so much as believing in the Giants as it's not believing in Ron Rivera and the Commanders. Next game we have up on the docket, the Arizona Cardinals are getting 7.5 in Seattle. This is a divisional game. Arizona has been awful on the road. And the number for Arizona to score is 18.5. I know you can get some higher scoring games in the NFC West matchups. We've seen it before. I don't think this is it. Not only the numbers itself just don't match up. You're talking about Seattle's team number is 27.5. They are a 9-point favorite if you look at the total points, but yet the line itself is 7.5. So what is missing here? I think what's missing is they don't want to give that many points to Arizona, because the honest engine is this. Seattle's probably not going to score 28. Seattle's probably going to be somewhere in the low 20s. They're going to keep Arizona in the mid-teens. And I like Arizona minus 18.5. That's my favorite play in this game. It is a game that, look, we talked about this earlier. We talked about the Bills. And by the way, that Bills line keeps going up 7.5, 8, 8.5, then back down to 7.5. It's money going in and out. So if you like it, you better grab it, because I do believe it's going to be closer to 10 by kickoff. But Seattle and Buffalo on a teaser, I like that one a lot. You essentially would get it down to where the two of them would only have to win by two. The next game, another 4 o'clock kickoff out in Los Angeles. The Rams are hosting the Steelers. This Steelers team just has not been impressive. They really haven't. And I'm looking at the fact they are getting 3. They're coming off a bye. I get that. But this Rams team should be able to score. And they should be able to get the points up. I like the Rams minus 3. At home against the Steelers, even with the Steelers coming off the bye, and I respect the hell out of what Mike Tomlin can do off of a bye. And maybe if this was in Pittsburgh, I would give it more of a nod. But because they're having to go out west, I'm not believing. I've got to see it to believe it before I'm going to back Kenny Pickett on the road to be able to out-gunsling Stafford and Puka and Cooper Kupp. And I think you're going to get a heavy dose in the passing game with Kyren Williams being injured in the backfield. Because of that, Rams, look, the team total in this game, Rams 23.5. I like that one a lot. I think the Rams will get over that number. But the pick I'm giving you is Rams minus 3. All right. Green Bay and the Broncos. The Packers. The Broncos. Two teams with two terrible quarterback play. One of them has got an excuse. He doesn't have much experience. The other one has zero excuse. He's one of the highest paid players in the league, and he absolutely stinks. There is nothing that attracts me to this game. I don't believe in either offense. I'm a little shocked that the over-under is 45. And that's the number that I would jump on if I was going to jump anything here. The over-under is 45 points. That just seems like a game. I get it. The two defenses have not been very impressive. But what's more unimpressive is the quarterback play for both teams. So unless you're going to tell me there's going to be a bunch of pick sixes, I'm taking the under. 45, that's a high score. That is a high score in the National Football League. Chargers are at the Chiefs. 4:25 kickoff. Los Angeles heading to Taylor Swift country. The Chiefs, now this number has started to go down. I grabbed it early in the week when the Chargers were getting 6.5. This was right after Monday Night Football. It's gone down to 5 in some books. Some you can still get it at 5.5. I like the Chargers a lot in this one. Now, I grabbed it at 6.5, if I'm being fair. The Chiefs, everyone thinks of the Chiefs as this offensive juggernaut that has the ability to blow you out. That's not really who they are right now. They are a team that plays methodical. They play good defense. And they'll probably get the win, but it is a division game at home. And I don't see them running up the score on the Chargers because the Chargers normally play them very close. Strangely enough, look, the Chargers, if they had a better head coach, they might be near the top of the division right now. But they lose every single 2- and 3-point game, and I think they're going to lose another one. Give me the Chargers. Like I said, I had it at 6.5. It's sitting at 5.5 this afternoon. It could go up and down. If you're going to grab the Chargers, you need to grab them quick because you might think that the money's going to come in on Kansas City. But I don't think it is. I think what you're going to see is the sharp money is going to move towards the Chargers. You'll get the Joe Sixpacks jumping in on the Chiefs, but the sharp money is going to run to the Chargers, and that's the money that moves the line. Sunday Night Football, the big one, the biggest game of the weekend, bar none. Miami Dolphins getting 2.5 points against the Philadelphia Eagles. Eagles are the home team. Miami is coming in. Both teams, 5-1. Eagles coming off the loss. And people are jumping back and forth. A lot of solid arguments. 2.5 points. Do you take the Dolphins on the road? Do you take the Eagles? I'll tell you where I'm leaning. And this is the number that I'm really jumping for. And I want to see it go a little higher, and I think that it will. So I'm laying off the number right now. It's been going back around 52 points up and down on the over. Because it is the Sunday night game. And because these are two offenses that are thought of to be very explosive. And Joe Sixpack's going to be trying to chase his losses on Sunday night. Whatever he lost money on, he's going to be chasing it. And nobody likes to bet on the under, especially on a night game. It's not fun. It's not fun to pull for punts, turnovers, sacks. It's fun to pull for the over. I don't think you're going to get the over. I think by the time kickoff hits, it's going to be around 53, and that's the number that I'm looking for, around 53. I'll even take it at 52, 52.5, but 53 is what I'm really looking for. And I like the under in this one in a big way because one thing that people don't take into consideration with this, Philadelphia holds the ball, and you know they're going to try to take the air out of the ball against Tua and the Dolphins. It's the most explosive offense in football. You got to keep them off the field. How do you keep them off the field? Not just running the ball, but eating the clock, and that's going to play into the over-under. And then the Monday night game, San Francisco -7. I'm staying clear of this real right now. I'll probably lean into it later in the weekend, but honestly, with the injury question marks with San Francisco, giving 7 seems like a lot. If you were to ask me right now how I feel about it, I'm probably going the Vikings and taking the touchdown at home. It's a lot of points to give up on the road, even as good as San Francisco has been. And it's back-to-back games on the road. And it's a Monday night game. And the Vikings are kind of pushed into a corner. I think they get the. I think San Francisco is going to bounce back and get the win. Don't get me wrong. But you're asking them to win by 8 points or more to cover your bet. If you're going to ask me where do I go with this, I'm probably taking Minnesota plus seven. But I really want to see the injury report by Monday. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, the world of college football, we got some good, and I mean damn good matchups when we come back. Keep it locked in here. Braves Country Radio's Armchair Quarterback Show. Football Friday, baby. Let's get it.
Here's good news. There's still a need for hundreds of thousands of cybersecurity professionals in the U.S. right now. And My Computer Career is training people to help meet the demand. No IT experience? No problem. Take the free career evaluation today. Start your new life as an IT pro in as little as 4 months. Grants covering up to 53% of the cost are available to those who qualify. It's not rocket science. It's mycomputercareer.edu.
Enjoy sun-drenched days, epic stays, and plenty of room to roam in Greater Fort Lauderdale. Our hotels, attractions, and restaurants have taken the Visit Lauderdale Safe and Clean pledge so you can relax and explore with confidence. When you're ready for that well-deserved staycation, our 23 miles of golden beaches await. Find wide open spaces to hike, bike, kayak, and paddleboard. Visit your favorite attractions, then dine out in style in dining rooms or al fresco on waterfront patios. Learn more at sunny.org.
And I don't care what's on the line, Howard, you have got to say that we know in the booth.
Yes, we have to say it. Remember, this is just a football game. An unspeakable tragedy confirmed to us by ABC News in New York City. John Lennon, outside of his apartment building on the west side of New York City, the most famous perhaps of all of the Beatles, shot twice in the back, rushed to Roosevelt Hospital, dead on arrival.
Well, if you stand and block the screen, you may just lose your life. And that goes for all 30 friends and 30 friends' wives.
I don't know how many of y'all are old enough to remember that, but I was a young lad. I remember it being in the... I don't think I understood what was going on with the John Lennon being shot. It didn't really... You know, I was a little too young to understand how big of a deal he was. But anyways, every once in a while, I like to play that clip because I really thought that it... I just think it's a bone-chilling clip, and it really just... It amazes me how underappreciated Howard Cosell was at his time. But anyways, we'll get back into the picks. I know that's what everybody wants to focus on. Look, college football, we've got a lot of good plays right here. And by the way, game five ALCS, big one today. Doesn't get any bigger for those Rangers or Astros for that matter. 5:03 is first pitch. We will have pitch by pitch, play by play on Braves Country Radio. Find us on YouTube. YouTube.com/@Braves Country. We're going to have the entire World Series as well. If there's a God in the heavens, the Arizona Diamondbacks will get hot. Anyways, let's get into it. You look at the college football slate this weekend. We're going to focus on decent amount of games. But there are games out there that I'm going to tell you to stay away from, ones that I don't like. One in particular, this one hits home, Georgia Tech -4.5 against Boston College. I'm not loving that game. 4.5 points, a lot to give up. Boston College has a scrambling quarterback. I think it's going to be a close game, and I'm steering clear of that one. That's for sure. Oklahoma giving up 19 to Central Florida, noon kickoff. Oklahoma should be able to cover that. But that's a lot of points. And my concern would be them kind of coming into that game half asleep. It's an early kickoff. It's going to be 11 local time. And those always play into anyone who has followed the show and knows that, look, first of all, 64% win rate. in the last seven seasons, not too shabby. Second of all, I do pay attention to things like travel. I have talked about this for years to the point where guys on the show give me a hard time. I don't care. I stick with it. I believe in the East Coast, West Coast thing. I believe that if you have a West Coast team, especially in the NFL, but college football is what, it doesn't come into play as much in college football. But if you have a West Coast team going east on an early kickoff, nine times out of 10, I'm taking that East Coast team. Because the West Coast team, their body clock's off. I tend to do the same thing with the East Coast. If it's a day, if it's a night game, I don't have the same equation because you kind of have a little more time to get right. But a night game, a day game on the West Coast, it just throws your body clock off. So this typically goes with the NFL. I normally don't run into it much with college football. Now, you're going to get it more, and I cannot wait till next year when the Big Ten goes West Coast, because you know how many matchups we're going to get of, like, Oregon, Washington, Southern Cal, UCLA. They're all going to go east. Early kickoffs. Oh, it's going to be mayhem. Cannot wait for that. Mississippi State, Arkansas. I know there's a lot of SEC fans that would like to dig their teeth into this one. I just think these are two bad football teams. And I don't have a good beat on that. But the Penn State-Ohio State game, it's interesting to me. The line keeps moving towards Ohio State. It's at 5 this afternoon. I've seen it go down. I've seen it go up. It's at 5 right now. A lot of folks are on that Penn State Nittany Lion wagon. 5 points. Give me 5 points, right? That's not the number I keep staring at. I keep staring at the fact that Penn State and Ohio State, the over-under is 45. And I know Ohio State played a very, very low-scoring, slobber-knocking type game against Notre Dame. I think you're going to get a little more fireworks. You typically do in this rivalry. And I think 45 is a low number. Give me the over. I love the over in this one. Tennessee Volunteers, Alabama Crimson Tide. That number keeps dropping, and I hate it because at the beginning of the week, when I first looked at these numbers and I grabbed it, it was 52 to 53 points. It is now sitting at 48.5, 49 on some books. And I don't know how it's going to get that high. Tennessee, Alabama, I hate the fact that we're losing the value on it. So I tend to not tell folks to jump on that, because when you start seeing the number move in the opposite direction, especially when it's an under that you like, it's a different feeling to me when you have a number that's going in what you think is the wrong direction. But it's, I guess what I'm trying to say is, when you think that you like the under and it keeps dropping, that makes me nervous. That makes me think that maybe I'm reading this wrong and maybe I should be staying off of it. I'll probably end up teasing it, but I should probably stay away from it, to be honest with you. One of my favorite teases at the beginning of the week that I grabbed, because at the time Tennessee was 8.5-point underdogs. The Alabama Crimson Tide in Tennessee, the number was 52.5. I took a 7-point teaser at a -125 and took Tennessee up to 15.5 points and the over-under at 59.5. I love that ticket. It's my favorite ticket of the week. But when you start losing the number a little bit, it makes me a little nervous. I still think if you take a 7-point teaser on this, you're probably going to be good. 55.5. Tennessee would be getting, 14.5? That's not too shabby. That's not too shabby. I think this is going to be a rock fight. These two teams are not going to throw the ball much. They are going to try to win the line of scrimmage. And they're going to try to find a way to move that ball, but more importantly, not give the ball away. And there's going to be conservative play calls. There's going to be conservative game plans. Both teams are going to be under the impression that if they can keep it within arm's distance by the fourth quarter, they'll take their chances. Tennessee's game plan is going to be something very similar to the fact of what they did against Texas A&M, where they're going to try to win the turnover battle. It's going to be run, throw one over the top every once in a while to keep you honest, and let's go. Alabama, it's not the Alabama that we're used to seeing, where they dominate the line of scrimmage on both sides. This is going to be a team that's going to have a hard time moving the ball on that Tennessee front seven. This is not the 52-49 shootout in Knoxville last year between these two teams. That was one of the greatest college football games I've seen in the past decade. This is not going to be it. This may be an equally as close football game, but it's going to be in the low 20s at best. Low 20s at best. Utah is getting 7 at Southern Cal. Southern Cal is beat up after playing Notre Dame. I also believe Southern Cal is going to be a little more, they're going to be a little more motivated to show up in this one and to prove who they are. I don't think it's going to matter. Utah tends to play Southern Cal physical. Utah tends to move the ball on Southern Cal methodically. And Utah, you're going to give me 7 points? I think Utah has a very good chance of pulling off the upset, but regardless, it's not a game I'm going to give you as a lock, but if I'm picking one way or the other, I'm going to take the points in the Utes. They'll hang around there. They will hang around. Southern Cal's defense doesn't stop anybody. And if you punch Caleb Williams in the mouth, he'll go out there and turn over the ball 3 times. He's a talented quarterback, don't get me wrong. By the way, have y'all seen this nonsense where his dad and everything's talking about that he wants part ownership of a football team if they're going to draft him? I hate to break it to him. That's not possible. They don't allow that. Remember earlier in the year when people were questioning whether or not Tom Brady was really and truly retired and whether or not he would come out of retirement? Well, Tom Brady is a minority owner of the Las Vegas Raiders. For Tom Brady to come out of retirement, let's say Tom Brady wanted to come out of retirement and play the rest of the year, he would have to sell off his ownership of the Raiders. That's the way that works. And they have that set up for a good reason, because they don't want this nonsense to start. Caleb Williams can go play in the CFL for all the National Football League cares. They're not changing that rule for one person. One guy who has never put on pads and thrown one pass in the National Football League. He's not getting part ownership of a franchise, no matter who it is, worth over $1 billion, because every NFL franchise is worth at least $1 billion. At least. That's slow playing that. That's shortchanging it. At least. You're not getting that. I don't care what the small stake is. You're not getting it. They're not going to let you play in the league if you're part owner. So what would be the motivation to any owner to give you part ownership? Because you wouldn't be able to play. So what the hell's the point? All right, move on from that nonsense. There's always something nonsensical coming out of social media, isn't there? I like to look at, you know, Twitter and whatnot every once in a while and just get a big hearty laugh at some of the nonsense that... And they get shared by, like, major outlets. And the outlets think that there's some validity to anything that they're sharing. And then you get the fans fired up. And they get to arguing back and forth, and then they try to drag a fan because they think they know more, and they really don't. It really is nonsense. Anyways, back to the rest of the story, as the great Harvey would say. By the way, Iowa's at home against Minnesota. That's kind of a low-key, interesting matchup. This is how little Vegas thinks of Iowa and Minnesota's offense. 31 points is the over-under. Wow! 31 points in a college football game? I mean, hell, I'm tempted to grab it, but you may not get there. Those are two struggling offenses. But 31 points? The over-under for the team totals? 17.5 for Iowa, 13.5 for Minnesota. Whoa! And I don't know if I feel comfortable over-under on either one of those. If I was going to grab that at all, I am jumping on a teaser and grabbing the over and just logically would think that enough points get scored where I can get above 26 points, 25 points, somewhere in that neighborhood. But that is one of the lowest over-unders I have seen in quite some time. Other games out there on the docket. I know Northwestern is bad. I'm not trusting Nebraska minus 11.5. You can have that number. You can have that number. That is not happening. Pittsburgh, plus 1 at Wake Forest. It's an overreaction of Pittsburgh taking Louisville. We told you. I told you. That was my lock last week. That was my number one lock, that Pittsburgh was going to beat Louisville. I love getting a college football team that I think is smelling themselves. And that was why I went with it. Here is one that I'm going to grab and tell you that I like this one a lot. Because I just don't think they're a very good football team. And they're going on the road. And though this rivalry is usually pretty close, the Missouri Tigers are at home this week. They're giving up between 6 and 7 points. Depends on how you can get it. I'm going to take the Missouri Tigers at home against South Carolina. South Carolina's just not a very good football team. And they're going to go on the road, and they just have a very emotional loss. I think they're really close to giving up, and I'm going to take the Missouri Tigers. Oregon is a 20.5-point favorite home against Washington State, and that number keeps rising. This is the smell yourself game for Oregon. They've had a couple of tough games. Last week was a very emotional game on the road. They're coming home. Most people look at this as a get-right game. I don't look at this as a get-right game. I look at this as a smell yourself or more of a exhausted game. What are they going to have in another early kickoff, 12:30 local time? Oregon is susceptible, 20.5 points. I know Washington State's had some trouble here recently, but 20.5 points, that is a load to give up. Give me the Cougars. Another game of interest that's out there, Wisconsin. They've got the injury bug hitting them, but Illinois is a bad team, 2.5 points. I'd be willing to probably take Wisconsin on the money line, but not one of my favorite plays. Ole Miss is giving up 6.5 at Auburn. It is a night game. Auburn has played so much better at home than they have on the road. I still believe that Ole Miss is a bit of a fraud. I don't believe that they are as good as their record indicates. They were thoroughly dominated in that Alabama game. And they've gotten a couple of impressive wins. But really what it comes down to with Ole Miss, they haven't played a ton of tough competition. Though they're in the SEC, they've gotten kind of a pass this year on their schedule so far. They're giving up 6.5 at Auburn. I like the Auburn Tigers to cover that number. Wouldn't shock me. Would not shock me one bit if Hugh Freeze's defense pulls off the win in the Plains, but I definitely like the points. Florida State is at home against Duke. They are a 14-point favorite now. I don't love that number. Duke, to me, can hang in there with Florida State. I could see FSU pulling away, but I'll tell you the number I like more than anything else. Duke and Florida State, the over-under is 49. Duke, for folks who haven't watched Duke play this year might roll their eyes when they think of Duke football. This is not your older brother's Duke football team. Duke's got a damn good defense, and they're a physical team. Their offense is going to struggle to score. But this is a damn good team. Here's the number I like the most. Duke. Total points. Right now it's sitting at 17.5. Now you might get it at different numbers. It doesn't matter. We'll just call it 17. Whatever. I've seen it 16.5. I've seen it 17. I've seen it 17.5. I got it at 17.5. I don't believe Duke is going to be able to get 17.5 points. I don't believe they're going to be able to hit 18. Unless there is some kind of a couple of like really short. And look, Duke does get turnovers, so it's not all their own possibility. Florida State's been pretty good at protecting the ball. Duke is going to have to get a short field to be able to pull that off twice. They're not going to have a lot of long drives against this Florida State defense. I like the under in this one a lot as well. It's 49. FSU Duke is 49. But I really would prefer to grab Duke minus 17.5 because if things got out of control, remember, Duke is not playing a road game this year. They have not played a game of this magnitude in this program for a long time. So for them to go on the road and for them to have to play in Tallahassee, where that fan base is going to be rocking Saturday night, that is a big ask to be able to beat Florida State on the road. But the other thing is, what if the game gets away? What if it unravels? What if it doesn't? If it unravels, are you still going to go and expect Duke to keep Florida State off the board? So that's why I'm more inclined to take Duke minus 17.5 than I am the minus 49. Because I could see me getting drilled in the end. I could see Florida State gives up, we'll say, 13 points. But Duke on the back end, their defense finally breaks down. They give, I'm not going to say they give up, but they give way to a late touchdown. And Florida State wins the game, something, you know, going away. They score 38 or whatever. Then it becomes increasingly impossible to get under that 49. Michigan, by the way, 24-point favorite at Michigan State. This is a looky-loo. I like to call these looky-loos. And I could see Michigan looking past this. Now, I know it is a rivalry game. And so Michigan should be up for it. Michigan has been so damn impressive all year long that I put them number one in my armchair top 10. So when I say this, I'm not saying this like I don't respect Michigan. I think right now they are the best team in the country. But it's college football, and it's played by humans. It's played by kids who are humans. Michigan better be careful, because this is a Michigan State team that doesn't have anything to hang their hat on this year. But boy, if they could pull off a win at home, or even a close loss, they better watch out, because this is the type of game that a team rallies around. And look, if Michigan goes out and starts playing well at the very beginning, it's going to be fine. But if you kind of stub your toe and you let them hang around and you let them hanging around, and the next thing you know, there's a block punt getting returned for a touchdown. You Michigan fans know what I'm talking about. Clemson, Miami, 8 o'clock. This is where we're going to find out. Does Miami continue to fight? They spit the bit against Georgia Tech. We're all aware of that. They got ran out the door the second half against North Carolina. They put up a couple of garbage time touchdowns, but that game was over. They're at home now. They're getting 3 points against Clemson. Does Clemson, have they given up? Or are they still looking at going, look, if we can win out, we can still have a heck of a season. We may not even end up in the ACC championship game, though they could if they got some help. But what if Clemson wins out because South Carolina does not look like a threat. Clemson could end up in a pretty nice bowl game. This is one of my favorite games on the docket to watch, and I hate that it's going to go on at the same time as the Florida State-Duke game, because I'm going to be locked in on this because I cannot wait to see who wins. Because whoever loses, you're going to get some big heat from that fan base about it's time to move on from who. Is it going to be, we're sick of Dabo? Although, they're not firing Dabo, so get that out of your head. But there's going to be the fan base is going to go nuts. We're tired of Dabo. He's not aggressive in the transfer portal at all. He's getting schooled. Or is it going to be Mario Cristobal? Because the fan base is going to say, yeah, he can recruit, but what the hell else does he do? This is a huge game. I tend to side with give me Miami at home and the points. Man, I am steering clear of this game. Whew! And that over under 49, that is ridiculously high. This is going to be won and lost in the trenches. And both teams are going to play it close to the vest to start out. They don't want to be the one that turns the ball over. 49 is enormous over under in that game. The last one we'll look at real quick, just because it's an absurd number. Washington is a 28-point favorite at home against Arizona State. Arizona State's not a good team. But Washington, you talk about teams smelling themselves. 28 points. I'll take my chances on that. All right, real quick, going to give you the locks. And then we're going to switch over to Braves Country and get you start getting you ready for Game 5 of the ALCS. Man, that's going to be a good one. All right, here are the locks. We kind of mentioned them, but here are the locks. These are the ones that I say, give it to me. This is your six-pack to go on a football Friday. My number one lock of the night, give me the Buffalo Bills, -7. I like that one a lot. My number two lock of the day, I'm telling you right now, I don't see how the Colts are scoring 18.5 points. My number three lock, going back over to college football, Duke -17.5. My number four lock, Auburn +6.5. Number five, give me, I mean, come on, Arizona State +28. That's ridiculous. Give it to me. Washington, by the way, has not been covering the spreads. They've been winning. They've been impressive. But they give up a lot of back-end points. So we got one more lock. I know the numbers come down. Hey, it just moved up again. So you know what? I'm going to grab it. Give me the battle of Rocky Top versus the third Saturday in October in Tuscaloosa. Give me Alabama-Tennessee -49.5. My advice to you would be to take some of these, maybe turn them into teasers, but those are the games I like the most. All right, we're going to step aside, take a quick break. When we come back, Braves Country today, a lot of moving and shaking that the Braves have got to get ready for here in the offseason. We're going to peel back some of these rumors, some of these ridiculous rumors, and some that are actually pretty damn on the nose. We'll be back in a flash.
Well, the season's finally here.
The Armchair Quarterbacks are back. Saturdays, 10 a.m., you'll be tailgating with the Armchair Quarterbacks. Mac McGee, Joey Antones, and the rest of the Armchair Quarterbacks live, 10 a.m., Saturdays this fall. Talking college football, SEC, ACC, Big Ten, the NFL, fantasy football advice, and our picks against the spread. Right here on Braves Country HD, 99.1 FM, WQEE. You're listening to WQEE 99.1 FM, The Key in Noonan, Georgia, home of Braves Country with Mac McGee and the Armchair Quarterbacks, weekdays, 3 p.m. Eastern to 5 p.m. Eastern, right here on The Key and YouTube.com at Braves Country.
You're in Braves Country.
Good afternoon, Braves country. Welcome in. We're heading towards the offseason. Of course, no official moves can be made until we get to the end of the World Series, and that's obviously a couple of weeks from now, depending on how long that lasts. But we'll say early November. Right now, how the World Series lays out, very key dates we'll go over here in a second. But right now, the World Series, the dates are this. It's very odd the way that they picked some of their dates, but I kind of get it. They're trying to avoid the NFL. But this is the way the World Series begins. Game one is going to be Friday, October 27th. Doesn't matter how quickly or how not so quickly the series ends for the American League, the National League, that is the start date. Because they want to play game two on Saturday night, October 28th. They want to take Sunday off and go Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then take Thursday off and go Friday, and then game seven would be Saturday. And that is scheduled for November 4th. If the season ends early, these timelines get pushed up, but we're going to assume just for this exercise that it's going to be November 4th. And when you think about, first of all, the Major League Baseball schedule timeline gets going pretty quickly. And you'll see it because you'll start seeing moves instantly. And just so that you're clear on this as far as the World Series, I've gotten a few questions. We've gone over a couple of times. But this is essentially how the World Series will play out, who has home field. There is no scenario where the 84-win Diamondbacks host the World Series, meaning 4 out of 7. You'll play 2 at home, you go 3 on the road, and then you'll take the last 2 at home. There's no scenario where the Diamondbacks get that. The Rangers are the top seed. And I know that sounds strange, but if they get to the World Series, they are the top seed. Houston would not get the tiebreaker over Philadelphia. And I know that's strange because you go, wait a minute. Houston has the home field advantage in the American League. What the heck? It's because they go to head-to-heads. Texas and Houston just happened to finish with the same exact record along with the Philadelphia Phillies. They all finished with 90 wins and 72 losses. But Texas swept the Phillies in the regular season meeting 3 games. Philly took 2 out of 3 against Houston. And so that's where you have that. So pushing that aside and looking at the offseason, and it gets pretty they really do hit the ground running, to be honest with you, because I've gone over this before, and I'm not a big fan of the way Major League Baseball does all of their dates. I feel like that they should spread some things out. But here are the key off-season dates. We're going to go over that real quick, and then we'll get into the Atlanta Braves and who they are going to be eyeing going forward. First of all, the Atlanta Braves are going to be looking at a couple of different things. They've got some players that are going to tender, non-tender. We'll get into all that down the road. But first of all, there is something that gets played into this, and the Rule 5 draft is December 6th this year. And the reason why the Rule 5 draft is important is because it's basically players that you do that are unprotected. So not only can the Braves get guys poached from them if they do not protect them, they can go poach other players. It used to be known as the Rule 4 draft, now it's called the Rule 5 draft. You don't want to get into the nuts and bolts of that, but that's essentially what it is. And folks are going to be very, very locked in baseball fans, baseball people, locked in immediately after the World Series. 5 days after the World Series ends, 5 days, free agency begins. So whenever the World Series ends, it doesn't matter if it ends on Saturday, November 4th, or if it ends up in a sweep, it's literally 5 days afterwards. And that's why it seems like it hits you like a ton of bricks, because you barely get over, all right, well, this has happened, this has happened. Teams have an exclusive 5-day negotiating window with their internal free agents once the World Series ends. And they do that to give teams a chance to keep their brand. But free agency, there have been in years past where it actually has jumped off quicker. I can remember when it was literally 24 hours after the World Series, and they've kind of pushed that back. A lot of this got changed in the most recent CBA. November 7th through the 9th are the general manager meetings, and those are out in Scottsdale, Arizona. Those are not to be confused with the winter meetings. Those are the general manager meetings. Those are in Scottsdale, Arizona, November 7th to November 9th. So that is essentially set up. If your team won the World Series, and let's say they won it on Saturday, November 4th, you're probably having your parade that Monday, and then you are literally getting on a plane and hauling bones to Scottsdale, Arizona. That would be very fortuitous if for some miracle it's the Arizona Diamondbacks that win it, because the general managers drive right up the road. But with all that being said, the 7th through the 9th, those are GM meetings. And they have a chance to have internal conversations with each other, often beginning to lay out the groundwork for potential trades in the offseason. So if the World Series does end on the 4th, and you get the GM meetings on the 7th, free agency has not kicked in until a couple of days later. If the World Series ends much earlier, let's say 5 or 6 games, then it's essentially expiring when these GMs meet up. So it gets really tricky at that point. Any player who receives 1-year qualifying offer has a short amount of time to decide whether to accept it or reject it. If a player accepts it, he returns to his current team for 2024. If a player rejects it and signs elsewhere, his former team receives draft pick compensation. And that really all comes down to what tier of a free agent they are, et cetera, et cetera. And basically, we would go over those as they happen. If this player gets signed, or we sign this player, we would let you know what the compensation is. Because you're never going to remember all of these free agents and what the compensation would be. Be an absolute just, I mean, you talk about getting into the beautiful mind type of stuff, right? So, players on the roster. Now, this is the non-tender deadline. Players on the 40-man roster have fewer than 6 years, and that's the key number, fewer than 6 years of major league service time must be tendered a contract each offseason by the tender deadline. That is November 17th. So, we are going to know pretty quickly, essentially 2 weeks after the World Series is how it lays out. It's a Friday, by the way, November 17th, and we will come on and talk about it that Friday. This includes players who are due raises via arbitration. If a club non-tenders a player, he immediately becomes a free agent, etc., etc. So, with all that being said, that's a key date, November 17th. Then you have what is essentially, just about 3 weeks, December 4th through December 7th. Those are key dates. That is the winter meetings. That's the big one. That's the big splash. The ones that we always see splattered all over the screen. We'll be following that and covering that right here on Braves Country today. It's in Nashville this year. We had actually talked about going up and covering it, but we've got some obligations that we can't get out of, so this year it's not going to happen, but we do want to cover one in the very near future. The GM meetings in November, essentially get the framework started for what they're going to talk about in the winter meetings. So essentially, they have about a month to go back, talk with their front office. All right, this is what's going on. This is what we could get. Now, look, you might get moves, and in fact, you do get significant moves before the winter meetings every single year. Every single year, you get a significant move. It never fails. But with that being said, the winter meetings traditionally kind of launch the real free agent window, because what happens after those meetings and during those meetings, big free agents are signed, and you'll get a couple of big free agents signed before the winter meetings because there's going to be teams that want to jump out there. In fact, Alex Anthopoulos is usually very, very active and aggressive even before the winter meetings. And it's not that he's worried about making the splashy headlines. He's wanting to get in front of the action. He goes to teams and goes to players. And whether it's a trade or if it's a free agent signing, he will go out there and say, look, this is what we're offering. This is what we're getting. We're not going to wait. If you want this, let's get it. And so with all that being said, this is going to be a situation where we're going to get into those winter meetings December 4th to 7th. And by the way, for those of y'all who are wondering, yes, that actually falls on a Monday to a Thursday. They actually start showing up on that Sunday. So there are rumors already flying on that Sunday. That Monday we'll come on live and talk about the winter meetings. Make sure that you're following us on youtube.com/@Braves Country. Braves Country Radio is going to cover the winter meetings, and we're going to do a lot of live shows during those winter meetings. Not exactly sure how the rest of my schedule lays out that week, but you can rest assured we're going to be covering the winter meetings. Anytime there's a big signing, we're going to jump on and talk about it. And a lot of them will not be scheduled. You just need to hit the subscribe button, because something happens quickly, we're going to jump on instantly and talk about it. So that's the game plan for the winter meetings. And looking at during the winter meetings, we talked about this briefly before, but December 5th is the Major League Baseball draft lottery. So they're going to have a lottery on December 5th, which is a Tuesday, and it will announce. So how this works out, for instance, while the Mets finish with the 8th worst winning percentage, they'll have the 7th best odds in the lottery, because the Nationals, who finish with the 5th worst winning percentage, are not eligible to receive a lottery pick this year. Getting one of the top 6 picks is an extreme importance for a team like New York, since it's one of those 6 picks that are protected when it comes to luxury tax penalties. So if the Mets get the 7th pick or lower, that selection will drop 10 spots because of the amount they have exceeded for the luxury tax. So that is a key thing we're going to be keeping an eye on. All of us who are fans of teams in the National League East that are not Mets fans, we're going to be rooting like hell for the Mets to end up with that 7th pick. And even if the Mets finish with one of the 6 worst winning percentages in Major League Baseball, they would not be guaranteed a top 6 pick, since those picks will be determined by the lottery, as we just stated. But the Mets' chance of a top 6 pick are over 40% at this point. So we'll dive into that. Like I said, that's on December 5th. December 7th, once again, is the Rule 5 draft. If a team selects a player, they must keep that player on their 26-man roster or the IL for the entire season, or be forced to offer him back to the team he selected. So whoever the Braves may grab in the Rule 5, you can't just grab him and throw him onto your 40-man roster and tuck him away. He's got to be on the 26-man roster the entire year, unless he's injured. So at that point, but the moment he comes off the IL, he's got to go to the 26-man roster. So this is a situation where you grab a guy and go, well, you know what, we could really use some depth and we'll send him down to Gwinnett and we'll see what happens. No. It's got to be someone who would. So that's why you don't see a lot of moving and shaking in the Rule 5 draft. But sometimes there's a player out there that a team really wants to explore, and they'll grab him. And then if they take him off the 26-man roster at some point during the season, they'll offer him back to you. Doesn't mean you have to take him, but they will offer him back. In February, once a player is offered arbitration figures are exchanged. The team that the player's agent have a decent amount of time to come to terms with the new contract. If that doesn't happen, both sides submit salary proposals, and then there is an independent salary arbitrator that determines what number you go with. And you'll see these flood in just before the season starts. This is all teams, but you will see it flood in. If you remember back in 2022, right after the lockout, you remember in the middle of summer we were getting all these numbers? That was because there wasn't enough time, because during that lockout, players, agents, teams, they weren't allowed to communicate. So when the clock got reset in March of that year, they pushed everything back, because I can remember arbitration numbers coming back for the Braves, and it was really awkward because you were getting these arbitration numbers either for or against the player. They were taking place in the middle of the season. And the arbitration situation is the worst thing that goes on in Major League Baseball. And I'll tell you why I say that. Many of the players want to sit on the arbitration. And it is a terrible idea, because what happens is the players get to hear what the front office is saying about them, why they're not worth the dollar that they want to spend. And then a lot of those players, a lot of them, because they talk about it down the road, they take it personally, and at no point are they ready to do anything but either A, it leaves a bad taste in everybody's mouth, or B, they get over it, or C, they hold their feelings now, but you'll hear them constantly, it's brought up when they hit free agency. Well, I wanted to go because they didn't appreciate me. And that's not what's really going on. What's really going on is that it is a business, and the team is trying to save as much money as they can, and the player's agent's trying to get as much money as they can, and they're in there negotiating and fighting with the arbitrator. I've said this for years. The players should not be involved in it. Send your agent in there. If you're dopey enough not to have an agent, then I guess you would have to go in there. But send your agent in there. Behind closed doors, they shouldn't be talking about it. And just let it play out. And then they come back and say, hey, this is what you got. This is what we offered. Now, I know a lot of these agents will probably still spill the beans, but it's better that there's so many players that sit in on those arbitration meetings, and it is just, it's an awkward thing. Mid-February, spring training begins. And so it's usually right around, you could almost pinpoint when your team is going to hit spring training, because think of the Super Bowl and basically think a couple of days after. You can think of the Super Bowl. I used to think of it as right around Valentine's Day, but it's usually a day or two after the Super Bowl. The first spring training games this year are February 24th. So there you have the timeline of the big time dates between the off season and spring training. Now, what we're going to do today is we are going to hit up some of the rumors that we're hearing. And trust me, there's some really goofy rumors. By the way, teams can still re-sign their players if their season has ended. Teams can still sign teams to minor league contracts, but it's usually pretty quiet this time of year. But I'll give you an example. This week, the Reds re-signed catcher Luke Mayle to a one-year, $3.5 million contract with a club option in 2025. And that's because he was a pending free agent. So let's get into who, by the way, I found a pretty interesting article talking about one prospect for each team. And I do want to hit that up really quick, and then we'll get into the free agents. The Braves, the prospect that everybody's crazy about, this shouldn't shock anybody, it's the SSAJ. AJ Smith-Shawver, who, remember when he entered this year as a 20-year-old, he only had 77 professional innings. But over 62 minor league innings with a K rate of 11.5 per nine, he had a batting average against him in the major leagues of the batting average against AJ Smith-Shawver was 183 on the major league level. Now, if you're wondering about the other teams in our division, the ones that they jump out, they talk about for the Mets, it was Jet Williams. He is a shortstop slash outfielder. This year, he was ranked as the 14th overall prospect in Major League Baseball. The Marlins, kid by the name of Troy Johnson, he is a first base prospect, and he paced the minors in RBIs this year. He ranked 4th in extra base hits with 67 and total bases at 281. And he played at Double A this season. Jet Williams, by the way, started in Single A, went to High A, and finished in Double A. If you're worrying about the Phillies, well, you saw him. Orion Kerkering, he was the guy. He still looked upon as a prospect. And we saw him up close and personal, and he's been pretty good. I still don't think his stuff jumps off at me as, like, phenomenal. I think he's very good. But I'm curious to see what their plan is for him going forward, because I would think that there may be a plan for him possibly going into the starting rotation down the road. But right now, he is in their bullpen. If you're wondering about other teams, the Cubs, Owen Cassie, an outfielder, he's the one that everybody's excited about. And we'll probably do more of a prospect show, but I did want to hit up a couple of them. Let's talk about, well, first of all, if you want to go to the Diamondbacks, they have a kid by the name of Ivan Melendez. He's currently playing at third and first, and he's the number 8 prospect in baseball. Hit 30 home runs. He was one of only 15 minor leaguers to hit 30 home runs, only two to reach the mark in fewer than 100 games. And that was along with Cardinals slugger Lucan Baker. Melendez had 30 home runs in 96 games. I mean, that is tearing the cover off the ball. Now, that being said, they're taking their time with him. And he was at High A and then eventually moved to Double A at the end of the season. But anyway, you slice it, 30 home runs against professional baseball pitching. I mean, come on. In 100 games? Good night. The teams of interest over in the American League, by the way, Rangers, Abilimi Ortiz, a first baseman prospect. He is number 14 overall, and the big number that jumps out at you on him is he was 4th in the minor leagues with 33 home runs and a 990 OPS. That's doing it. That is doing it. As far as the Astros, kid by the name of Shea Whitcomb, he's an infield prospect. And he, by the way, came out of UC San Diego. He has 77 home runs and 70 steals in 350 games over 3 minor league seasons. So it'll be interesting to see if they promote him, and I would think they would next year. We'll do a much deeper dive on this one down the road, but did want to hit that up. Okay, so here we go. This is it. This is where the rubber is going to meet the road. Here are the free agents that we can take a look at going into this offseason. And I'm going to jump into that here in 1 second. We got to take a really quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the free agents out there. And what are the likelihood of the Braves actually garnering after these? Because there are lists like, we're not going to go over the catchers today. What the hell is the point? The Braves are set at catcher. But we're going to go into realistic pitching, realistic possibly left field, all that on the way. Keep it locked in here on Braves Country today. We will be back in a flash. You're listening to Braves Country Radio.
Just want you to stop saying odd.
You get any sleep last night?
I don't sleep. I just dream.
It's the best in sports and entertainment. And get locked in and locked down with Rhino Radio Penitentiary, 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. with your host, me, Ryan O'Neill. Each and every morning, right here with the best in sports and entertainment, all the way from professional sports to college sports to River Dragons hockey and everything in between, including some of the very best local and national guests. It's the Rhino Radio Penitentiary, 7 a.m. to 10 a.m., Monday through Fridays, right here on 99.1 FM WQEE.
This portion of the show is being brought to you by Whatever We Have in Stock Are Us, your one-stop place to shop for whatever we happen to have lying around at the time.
In our sundown perambulations of late through the outer parts of Brooklyn, we have observed several parties of youngsters playing bass, a certain game of ball. Let us go forth a while and get better air in our lungs. Let us leave our close rooms. The game of ball is glorious. Walt Whitman. Brooklyn Eagle, 1846.
You're in Braves country.
All right. The free agents that be. Now we're going to go over a couple of the positions that we know are not going to be targets for the Braves, just to let you know who's out there. But it's not something we're going to spend a lot of time on. Just want to kind of scan over the team, the players, and we ranked them by war, because it's about the only thing that you can go by. If not, you're talking about a mess. But we're going to go by war. Couple of interesting ones. In fact, one that is still playing in the postseason, Mitch Garver, catcher for the Texas Rangers. He is a free agent. And it'll be interesting to see. Now, he's 33 years old, but he did have a 2.4 war, so there's going to be a lot of interest for him. He's traditionally been the designated hitter for the Rangers, so whether or not he still has what it takes to play behind home plate day in and day out, remains to be seen. The one that everyone's going to be trying to sign, but what kind of deal are they going to give him? Gary Sanchez had a very good bounce back season. He had a 3.0 war, but he's 31 years old. And I would caution anybody who's going to back up the truck for a catcher into their 30s. It normally does not work out. But there's a lot of other players. Now, here's one of the most interesting ones. Rhys Hoskins. I would think Philadelphia is going to try to re-sign him. Can you imagine how good that lineup would have been with Rhys Hoskins this year? If you remember, he had the injury in spring training. I mean, right out the gate. Rhys Hoskins, man, oh, man alive. He is going to be a free agent. Josh Bell, he should be a free agent. He's going to have the opportunity to opt out. I think he will. He's 31. He's got one chance to one last chance to get a somewhat long-term bag, as the kids like to call it. Some of the other first base one guys that are interesting, I don't know how much it'll move the needle, but some names you will be familiar with. Guys like Brandon Belt, Carlos Santana. Now, these guys are in their late 30s. Garrett Cooper sitting at 33 years old. G-Man Choi, 33. But anyways, we know the Braves are not going after a catcher. We know they're not going after a first baseman. I think we're set there. Second base, not much of a chance they go after any second baseman. There really isn't much out there for second baseman, by the way. The ones that are being listed as the top free agents, they're all in their mid-30s. Elvis Andrews, Whit Merrifield, Jorge Polanco, but is 30, but it's a club option, and I would think they're probably going to pick him up. I mean, there's really bottom of the barrel. It's a good thing that we've got a second baseman because there's nothing out there to fix it unless you're going to slide someone from a different position. Now, here's an interesting one, and I think he will get a lot of attention across the board. Ahmed Rosario is only 28 years old. He has a 2.9 WAR. It's pretty solid for those who don't follow what WAR does and means. But he's by far the best shortstop out there, especially at 28. He's going to get a pretty good signing. Now, Javier Baez, they have him listed as a guy who may opt out. He's not opting out. He's 31. He's a disaster, and the Tigers are paying him way too much money. They'd be damn fools. Tim Anderson, 31 years old. Old knockout Judy. I know who's not signing him. Cleveland. He's 31. And there's a club option. I think they're going to tell him to kick rocks. He has been a distraction in that clubhouse. He has been a disaster at the plate. He's much worse in the boxing ring. But I just don't think there's anything that's going to do anything for him. Now, here's an interesting name that you'll hear kicked around. The problem is this kid has never stayed healthy. He's had a phenomenal... I've watched him play since he came up as a rookie. I had him in one of my dynasty leagues, and I was all about him. Held on to him for much too long because you could see the talent, but he can't stay healthy. Adalberto Mondesi, 28 years old, unrestricted free agent. This should be the year that he's going to go out and make bukus of bucks. He's going to have a hard time finding a home. I think he's going to go out there and sign a short deal with someone, probably a one-year deal to try to prove it. But he's got to prove that he can stay healthy. He is absolutely one of the biggest disappointments in Major League Baseball. When you consider his talent and how much he's actually played, I'm going to put it up there as possibly one of, if not the biggest disappointment because of what his ceiling was over like the last decade. It's really sad. By the way, Adrianz is a free agent, 34. There's no way he's getting any interest from anybody. I'll tell you, this guy's going to get an interest. He'll get signed, and no one can ever figure out why, but he's just a gamer, and you can play him all over the place. It's Kike Hernandez. He's only 32, and someone will pick him up to be a bench slash platoon player. Third baseman, real quick, Max Muncy has a club option. I think they probably pick it up. It's what I'm hearing. Justin Turner has a player option. He's 39. That one will be interesting. He had a really good year. And Matt Chapman is hitting the free agency market. He had a 7.6 WAR. That is phenomenal. He's 31, and he's hitting the free agent market. He's going to look to get his... I mean, he's going to be looking for a five-year deal from somebody. And someone will pay it. I've never been a big Matt Chapman guy because he goes through so many peaks and valleys. But if you look at what he does over an entire 162-game season, he produces. Here's one, Josh Donaldson. Let's go ahead and start those rumors. I guarantee you you're going to get some kind of a goofy clickbait. Who knows who will do it, but somebody will start talking about Josh Donaldson coming back and being on the bench in Atlanta or something goofy like that. He is an absolute train wreck at this point in his career. A guy same age, he has a lower WAR, but I think he has more value. Evan Longoria, he's a much more solid player. It'd be interesting to see if John Segura tries to come back. But okay, here are the players that are going to be free agents. Because, for instance, Mark Kenya still has a club option. I mean, he's got a 4.2 WAR. It may get picked up, but 35 years old, he could hit the free agent market. But here come the names that everybody's going to be excited about, because they're going to be looking for left field. Now, we'll have to see how this plays out. I'm seeing a lot of different... Now, the thing is, I got to take this with a grain of salt. But I'm seeing a lot of people predicting and projecting that that Eddie Rosario is going to get picked up. They're going to pick up his contract. I hope to hell that's not true. I would just like to try anything else. Give us someone with more inspiration. Someone who plays with a little more oomph at the plate. And if they do go that route. Now look, if they bring back Rosario, there's not going to be much of an addition to help platoon with him. Now Forrest Wall is the guy you'd like to see. The problem is they're both left-handers. But here's a familiar name. What about Robbie Grossman coming back and playing left field? Ugh. I mean, we saw what he can do. He can be okay. But it's really not going to excite you. Eddie Rosario is on this list. Once again, he's a club option. We'll just have to see how that folds out. Guys of interest. Now, these are names that are going to jump off, and people are going to say, we got to bring them back. Jock Peterson. Jock Peterson is a free agent. It feels like one of those things that you can't go home again, right? I think a lot of Braves fans, if they were running the team, they would sign Jock Peterson. I don't know how wise it would be. Now, if you're going to keep Eddie Rosario, you're damn sure not keeping. You're not bringing in Jock Peterson because where do you put him? What I would like to see is them kick Rosario, bring in someone like, maybe not necessarily him, but someone like a Jock Peterson, and platoon left field between him and Ozuna. Ozuna can still play an okay left field. He's not outstanding. We know that. But hell, neither was Rosario. And Ozuna gave you 40 home runs. Let's say you don't go the Jock Peterson route. Let's say, look, we need new blood. Lourdes Gurriel is a very good player. He's 30, and I think he's going to be looking for a long-term deal, and I think that's probably going to be unrealistic. Another name that's interesting, but once again, he's a left-handed bat. And if you're bringing back Rosario, he doesn't play into it, is Michael Brantley. Professional hitter. Love everything about Michael Brantley. Winning pedigree. Comes up usually with big hits. He gives you professional at-bats. None of that flailing crap at the plate like Eddie has. And that's my number one reason. It's not even Eddie's defense. Look, I know he's up for the Golden Glove, which is an absolute joke. Just shows you how... So they do go by position, how many times you fielded the position, and you have to have X amount of innings out there to qualify. And I saw the list of how he ended up in the top three. And at first I scoffed and said, what the hell is he doing on the list? Then you saw the list. You're like, well, I guess if you didn't watch him play, if you didn't actually physically watch the games, and you're going off of analytics, I guess you can put him in the top three. But Eddie Rosario, if they pick up his club option, I say trade him. Trick someone into thinking he is something. If you do bring him back, you're going to have a right-handed stick to go with him. And there's some interesting things, but honestly, most of them, they're either aging veterans or they're a guy like Gurriel who, if you bring him in, you would have to kick Rosario because he's going to command too much money. Tommy Pham is a name they keep pushing out that I just don't like Tommy Pham as an individual, as a person. I think he's a jerk. I think he'd be cancerous in the clubhouse. If you see some of the interactions he's had with fans, he's very quick to play the victim, just like he did with Jock. Remember the whole thing with Jock Peterson? Where he went over there and struck him in the face over a fantasy football league. They aren't even teammates. And then we got all the information that came out about Tommy Pham in that fantasy football league. And those of us who played it, who play fantasy football, understand what really happened. Tommy Pham sucks at fantasy football, and he wanted to take it out on somebody. There was nothing done underhanded by Peterson. So I just don't like Tommy Pham. He is just, he's worthless. He's a worthless individual. And he just seems like he's going to be a cancer in the locker room. And why would we bring in a guy who was in that Mets locker room last year? And I guarantee you he had something to do with the bad juju that went on with the Mets. He just sucks as an individual. Can't stand him. I would be so disappointed if Tommy Pham is signed by the Braves. I can't wait to see where Tommy Pham signs because I want to make sure it's not the Braves. Anybody else. He signs with the Braves. I mean, that is going to be a gut punch. And he does have an edge. And you kind of, I mean, we've talked about guys, but it's a negative edge. I want a guy that's going to be a rah-rah guy, a guy who's going to inspire, a guy like Jock Peterson. I don't want a guy who's just going to be a negative influence in the locker room. Now, there's some other guys that are interesting, but it really depends on what kind of money that they would garner. A guy like Jerickson Profar, remember, he signed the one-year deal this year to prove a year. He really didn't prove it. He's not a terrible option if you're talking about a platoon guy. He's a switcher. He's got speed. But that would be like that. That would be like the bottom of the barrel I would pick if we're keeping Rosario. All right, maybe because the thing about Kevin Pillar, and I love Kevin Pillar. Kevin Pillar's not coming back. He sent out a tweet the other day, and if you read in between the lines, essentially what he was saying was, I had a great time. Thank you, Braves fans. But I've got to move on. And I knew this was going to happen because of interviews that we saw midsummer where he talked about he came through with a couple of big hits in a couple of series. And they asked him about, you know, getting the big hit, blah, 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 blah. And he kept pointing to the fact that it is hard for him to get into any kind of a rhythm because he's not playing every day. And he felt like that was, and look, I get it. What he's saying is, if I'm going to show my value and have an opportunity to maybe get one more, I don't think he's ever going to get another big time contract, but he's talking about a solid contract, a contract like the way Rosario got. He's got to play more. He's got to have more playing time somewhere. And someone will give him an opportunity, but wherever he goes, he wants to be the guy. And I've said this before, if it means we would take the money and put it into starting pitching and decided we were going to go with the platoon situation of Kevin Pillar getting most of the starts, but maybe you keep a Forrest Wall up, I would love that. They'd be at the bottom of our lineup. I get it. If it didn't work, you could always get aggressive at the trading deadline. But that's assuming we're going to take the money and spend it on pitching. Some of the other guys that could be in the fold that aren't necessarily considered left fielders, here's a couple of names. Here's another name you're going to get a lot of people talking about. It's probably going to get to the point where it gets nauseating until we find out either where they go or where the Braves go. We talked about Jock Peterson. Here's the next one. We know this one's coming. Adam Duvall. Adam Duvall is 35 years old. Adam Duvall, though, had a hell of a start to the season and then got hurt. Adam Duvall tends to not be able to stay healthy. So is that something you want to do? I would love to see Adam Duvall come back because he's so versatile in the outfield. You can give days off to everybody in the outfield. But what role does he want at 35 years old? Is he okay with coming back? I think he enjoyed his time at Braves Country. Would he be okay coming back and either playing some kind of platoon role or strictly off the bench? That would be an interesting, and he would give you a right-handed bat, one that I think we desperately need because Michael Harris II is still learning his craft. If Harris was as bad at hitting left-handed pitching as he is now at, like, let's say age 28, 29, then I would say he's a disaster. He's a Eddie Rosario against left-hand pitching. But he's not. He's still learning. But Duvall would be a great ad. What's he going to command in the free agent market? That's the big question. We're not getting Bellinger. Don't even people are going to bring it up. He had a 5.9 WAR. It's a mutual option. I think he's going to elect for free agency. I also think the Cubs are going to try to re-sign him. But he is 28 years old. He's had a hell of a year. He deserves to get a big contract. He's going to get it somewhere. You got some interesting other moves. Let's say we do kick Rosario to the curb. Kevin Kiermaier, but he's 34 and he's never been much at the plate. He's great defensively, but he's never been much at the plate. Michael Taylor is another name people are going to come at you with. He's a solid player, but he's really more of a platoon guy. I don't believe in Aaron Hicks. I've never believed in Aaron Hicks. I don't even want to think about Aaron Hicks coming to the Atlanta Braves. If Aaron Hicks comes to the Atlanta Braves, he's got to be on the bench, not even much of a platoon guy. And I don't think that's going to interest him. I think he wants an opportunity to play. As far as right fielders that are out there that you could possibly move over to left field, there's some big names, but ones of interest that are actually going to... Because, for instance, Kevin Pillar is on the right field list, though we know he played left field all year. He did play some right field, but let's be honest, he played left field. Here's some interesting names. And this one really interests me, although he got bounced around this year, but he's a right-handed power hitter. Man, could we use that? But he's 32, had a 3.1 WAR. Hunter Renfro is going to be a free agent, but he's probably going to command too much money, just like Teoscar Hernandez. Teoscar Hernandez is 31. He had a 4.3 WAR. That is going to command a pretty good salary. Max Kepler, 4.6 WAR, club option. I think the club picks him up. Michael Conforto has a chance to opt out. I don't know if he will. He didn't have a very good year. Either way, I don't have a lot of interest in him. I don't have much interest in Randall Grichuk or Will Myers, though they will be right-handed bats out there. I would much rather have Kevin Pillar back, but it sounds like he doesn't want to be back because he wants to play. So at that point, if you do that, you would honestly have to say goodbye, Rosario. It's your job, Pillar, and we're going to put a left-handed, we'll say, for instance, we're going to give a guy like Forrest Wall more at-bats. I just don't think it's possible. I don't think it happens. I think they're going to want to get younger. And here are some other names that are being considered designated hitters, but a lot of them can play in the outfield. Shohei Ohtani. Stop it! He's not coming to the Atlanta Braves. We waited a while to talk about this one. Shohei Ohtani is 29 years old. We talked about the WAR. You remember side notice? 3 WAR, a 4 WAR. Hey, a guy with a 5.6. Holy cow, is he going to bring it? Shohei Ohtani's WAR, even with the injury, 18.4, he is going to get somewhere north of $500 million. He's not coming to your Atlanta Braves. I hate it. I would love it. We don't run the team. We don't cut the checks. It's not happening. Jorge Soler could opt out, and that would be fun to bring him back. He would be the perfect addition. But what is he going to ask for? Would the Braves bring him back? I would love to see it. He's 32, 2.4 WAR. Jorge Soler is the one guy that got away that was the one I wanted to keep. Because he plays a decent enough outfield that you can put him out there and not feel nervous. And he is a right-handed power bat. But I just don't think Soler would come. Especially if we keep Rosario. Because he's not going to want to sit on the bench. And Ozuna still has 1 year left of his deal. I know there's talks about trading Ozuna. I just don't buy it. He's actually really good in the clubhouse. I know a lot of people have a hard time believing that. But all that stuff that happened, that was basically portrayed incorrectly by the media, does not reflect how the players actually feel about him. He's a very popular player. Here are some other guys that are out there. Now, if we do decide to go Rosario and you're looking for a guy who could platoon with them, Jesse Winker is a guy that kind of jumps off. He's 30. He's had a bad season. They could probably get him cheap, but is that what you want? By the way, Andrew McCutcheon's out there, and that would be fun to add, but I don't. He's 37. It sounds like that he's pretty much done, and he'll probably, if he comes back, he'll probably stay in Pittsburgh. He seems to enjoy it there. You have J.D. Martinez, but he's literally a DH at this point in his career. He's 36. He's not to mention he's probably going to ask for pretty substantial. He's got a 3.1 WAR. He's 36. You know you can put him in your lineup. I think the Dodgers actually re-sign him. But if they don't, wherever he goes, he's going to want to be the everyday DH. That unless you do move Ozuna for, let's say, pitching or something, how does that work? And that's about it on, I mean, you've got some guys that nobody wants. Darren Ruff, Tyler Naquin, Brad Mill. Brad Mill had a negative WAR. You don't want to sign that guy. Tommy La Stella, everybody remembers Tommy La Stella, but he would literally be at the end of the bench guy. So that's about it. We'll get into, next week we'll get into the possibilities of moves the Braves could make. Because, remember, we've got some guys that are expiring. Guys like Max Fried, who's going to be a free agent at the end of 2024. What could the Braves possibly do with him? Because if they're not going to re-sign him, could he be on the move? I know a lot of Braves fans hate to think about it. Let's be honest. We didn't get a lot out of him this year. And it seems like there's always something wrong with him when we get to the postseason. Even in 2021, remember he had a couple of disastrous starts before he righted the ship and pitched an incredible Game 6. I love Max. I wish he would stay, but I don't think he's going to stay long-term. And if he's not going to stay long-term, what are the options to get him out there and get a return? We'll talk about that more on Braves Country today. We'll see you Monday morning, 11 a.m. We'll be live on Braves Country Radio, YouTube.com. And then it'll replay right here on WQEE as well Monday afternoon. Tonight, 5:03 first pitch. I'm sorry, 5:07 first pitch. Game 5. It's a big one. It's a big one. And we will bring it to you pitch by pitch, play by play. Braves Country Radio. Find us on YouTube. Find us on Facebook. We're going to be running them both there. We try to put it on Twitter, but something always goes wrong. It always bugs out. I don't know what the deal is, but we are Braves Country FM on Twitter because radio doesn't fit in the. You only get what 15 characters, and so we just went with Braves Country FM. Our sister handle is Braves Country AM, so they kind of share each other. But anyways, we'll see you first pitch. Y'all have a great afternoon. And this offseason for your Atlanta Braves is going to be one of the biggest ever. They've got to make sure whoever they bring into that clubhouse is a winner. Not necessarily have won a championship, but their personality's got to be, let's go get a title. Y'all have a great day.
It's Friday, working stiffs. Everybody!
4, 3, 2, 1, happy weekend!
Goodbye, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go. We're back tomorrow with another show.
Well, unless we fire, we'll talk to you then. Goodbye, sweetheart. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Guys and gals, it's time to go. We'll see you on the next show.
Same bat time, same bat channel.
Thanks for listening to Braves Country with Mac McGee and the Armchair Quarterbacks on 99.1 FM WQEE, The Key in Noonan, Georgia, and simulcasting on youtube.com/@Braves Country. Braves Country comes your way weekdays 3 p.m. Eastern to 5 p.m. Eastern. Please follow, like, and subscribe today. Armchair Quarterback Radio, your first choice for Southern sports.
Something up this
6th of September, something of the 5th of September. She said a lot that I can't remember, something of the 5th. Can I get another cigarette, please? Can I get another cigarette, please? Yeah, I know I live to regret it, just give me another cigarette, please.
You're listening to WQEE 99.1 FM, The Key in Noonan, Georgia.